Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, the music means football season is near, and it's time for another edition of Sparty Talk. Satchmo and DB rolling at you on a fine Wednesday. DB will be joining us in a moment shortly, waiting for him to call in here to Sparty Talk. But we got a fun show planned for you. Got a little football talk, a little wide receiver talk for the Michigan State Spartans. We've got Brady Hoke making a fool of himself and Kirk Herbstreit making guarantees and writing checks his mouth can't cash. Or his mouth writing checks that he can't cash. So we'll get into that. We got a little college basketball talk coming your way. New college replay rules for basketball. We'll get into that. We'll also get into a little women's basketball rule change there that's going to have an impact. And then we'll talk and we'll wrap that up in a nice, neat little bow. And we'll go through that. Then we'll do a little Stanley Cup Finals talk, a little NBA Finals talk, get you caught up on the season. A little Justin Verlander discussion and what's going on with him in Detroit. He's just having a miserable start of the year. And miserable for Justin Verlander, still pretty good. But it sort of makes you wonder, where's the old Justin Verlander? And when you see pitchers sort of falling off the side, not pitchers, but baseball players in general falling off the side the way they've been falling off recently, you worry a little bit about that. And we'll get into that. And then at the end, we've got a couple of things we want to rant on. But we begin with a man who always looks good, DB. Greetings, DB.
Oh, greetings, Spartan Nation. It is better to look good than to feel good.
Are you trying to say you're not feeling good?
Oh, no. I'm just repeating the words uttered by one Fernando from Saturday Night Live a long time ago.
Well, I understand. Fernando, the eminently quotable Fernando.
No matter how you feel on the inside, it is better to look good on the outside.
Well, there you go. No matter. Yeah. That's something that George Zimmer could stand by the way. Because he used to like the way you look. He used to guarantee it, but he no longer does.
Yeah, we don't know what he's guaranteeing now.
Maybe we have no idea what he's guaranteeing.
Maybe he's going to take over Twinkies.
Oh, my goodness. But let's start, DB, with Michigan State wide receivers. Mm. Kyle Carrick asked for his release. Mm-hmm. Juwan Caesar transferred last month, and Jay Harris decided to become a rapper. I still can't believe it.
The Jay Harris one's a little bit – that one's just – that's like, okay, whatever. Yeah.
All right, so that is three people off the MSU wide receiver corps. Now, does this really hurt Michigan State? Not really, because here's who's on the roster. Tony Lippett, Monty Medeiros, A.J. True.
We don't know if those guys can catch the ball any better than the ones that are there.
Benny Fowler, Aaron Burbridge, Keith Mumphrey, De'Anthony Arnett, Andre Sims, and McGarry King. All right, and well, let's face it, these guys couldn't beat out these guys who couldn't catch the ball.
That's all they had to do.
We don't ask much, just hang on to the ball.
Yeah. Run your route and catch the ball, please. Thank you.
Yeah, create a little bit of separation and catch the ball.
Yeah.
We're not asking for a lot.
No, not too hard.
Not too hard, and it's just... But Michigan State still does have Trey Kilgore coming in from Cincinnati later in the year. So there you go. The Michigan State wide receivers. DB, this is, I mean, all levity and comedy aside, because it really is funny.
Yeah.
Michigan State has issues at receivers, at the receiver position, and they don't have any fresh bodies on the way this year to help out. It's not like running back where you have fresh recruits where it's like, well, yeah, the running backs weren't that good in spring practice, but we've got a couple coming into the fall, and let's see what happens. This is it, DB. Tony Lippett, Monty Medeiros, A.J. Troop, Benny Fowler, Aaron Burbage, Keith Mumphrey, D'Anthony Arnett, Andre Sims, and Magara Kings.
Yeah. I mean, for this season, it could be a big issue if,
DB?
Oh, sorry. We had a technical issue there. I had a dropout.
Okay.
I
just
on?
Heard you go. Yeah, you're still on. I just heard you go with A and then nothing.
Oh, okay. No, thank you for asking. I could have died or something. I appreciate it. No.
You are in a hospital, so I figured you would have been all right.
Well, I would have called the code. Code DB.
Code DB.
It becomes a problem if A, injuries start to happen, and or B, I don't know if you can lump this together, but the drops start happening, and then all of a sudden, who are you going to turn to? So it's a problem for this season coming up. If the Burbridges and the Benny Fowlers and these people that are here and the incoming guy don't play well, or get hurt, then the depth gets reduced. But, you know, looking at it from these kids' perspective that left, I mean, the rap guy aside, I mean, he just decided to pursue another livelihood besides football for Kyle Carrick and Julius Caesar. I mean, the fact here is that they were looking around saying, yeah,
Juwan
you
Caesar.
Know what?
Juwan Caesar. Hardly. Julius Caesar's Julius Caesar is a former emperor, bro.
Pardon me, Juwan Caesar. Pardon me. Sorry about that, Spartan Nation. Pardon me. That's probably the worst gaff I've had on that show. That's the worst gaff I've had on the show since that time that you hated that I said that some announcer was good that you thought was crap. I forget what his name was. I said Boomer Esiason or something like that. And you see, and you play, you Price is Right horned me about six times. I think that was my worst moment up until now on this podcast. But anyway, I apologize, Juwan Caesar. These kids may have looked around and said, you know, I don't see the playing time coming. These recruits are coming in. And for whatever other reason, who knows, maybe they wanted to play closer to home. I mean, Juwan was from Florida, right?
Yeah, no, Juwan was from Pennsylvania. No, Juwan was from Florida. You're right. No, Juwan was from Miami, and Carrick was from Coatesville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so they may have wanted to be closer to home. You don't know what's going on with their personal
situation. Yeah, they weren't getting playing time, DB. It's the bottom line.
Yeah.
They weren't getting playing time. That's what kids want. Kids want to play. You go to play the game. I mean, there isn't anything terribly complicated about this. You go to college, you want to play the game. It's really simple. And I understand what's going on. And so, yes, yeah, you go to play the game, and you sort of hope for the best going from that standpoint. And so when quarterbacks transfer, for example, to get playing time, you never, ever see fans complaining like, oh, I can't believe the quarterback transferred to get more playing time. You just don't see that.
Yeah.
And it's a similar thing with this. You know, they want to go get playing time, so good for them. Let them go get playing time. I'm more concerned with the receivers that are there and whether or not they're going to make some catches. And look, they struggled with two things last season, and it was pretty simple. They struggled getting separation, and they struggled catching the ball. And those are the two things, in addition to running the correct route. A receiver has three jobs. They have to run the right route, they have to create separation, and they have to catch the ball. And if you don't do those three things, then you're not effective on the field. And it's as simple as that, and you've got to be able to figure that out.
Pretty much. I mean, you broke that down pretty much like Bill Parcells would, Satchmo.
Well, Bill Parcells is my hero.
Yeah.
So I take that as the highest compliment.
And Sasmo, just like Bill Parcells, and his tolerance for bad kickers, or intolerance.
Intolerant of bad kickers. Well, I learned that from him.
Yes.
Look, there are certain things you want to learn from Bill Parcells, and there are certain things you don't want to learn from Bill Parcells. Intolerance of bad kickers is one of those things that's okay to learn from Bill Parcells. One of the things you don't want to do is learning to manage your boss. Bill Parcells, not good at managing his boss. Bill Parcells is good at a lot of different things, but managing his boss is not one of them. What was the famous line? He says they want me to be the chef, but they don't want me to shop for the groceries or something like that. When he wanted to pick the players in New England, and that's why he ended up leaving for New York. He's come out since then and said, yeah, you want to know what? I probably left New England a bit of a bad way. I could have handled it differently. And the owner's like, yeah, you want to? Well, we probably could have handled it differently. And so that's actually come out as a regret. But intolerance towards kickers? Oh, yeah. I'm right with Bill on that. Here's the thing. I respect kickers. I do, because kickers have a really hard job. If a quarterback misses three passes in a game, he's had a great game. If a running back carries the ball 15, 20 times, and if four or five times he doesn't gain a yard, and the rest of the times he runs fairly well, he's had a pretty good game. A kicker can miss one kick, and he's not had a good game.
Yeah.
And that's just tough. It really is. And so I feel for the kickers. Kickers belong in the Hall of Fame, for example. Ray Guy should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
All right, there's just no doubt about it. If you don't want punters in the Hall of Fame, well, don't make punting part of football. It's really that simple. You're either Ray Guy is the best punter that's ever played the game. He should be in the Hall of Fame. Adam Vinatieri should be in the Hall of Fame. These are really simple things. I mean, and Vinatieri hasn't retired yet, but when he does, Morton Anderson should be in the Hall of Fame. You want all of these kickers to accept the immense amount of pressure that it takes to go out and kick a game-winning field goal or get the 3 points you needed when your offense couldn't gain 6 inches when you have 350-pound men blocking in front of you. But sure, put the blame on the kicker. But then you're not willing to vote these guys into the Hall of Fame. It's ridiculous. But if they miss, Satchmo's not happy.
Oh, yeah, because
they
the
miss
icy
a lot.
Glare.
Oh, the icy glare. Then they miss a lot. Gone. Get them out of here.
Oh, yeah. I never, ever, ever would have wanted to have been a punter or a place kicker on a Bill Parcells team and missed. You get that icy glare all the way to the bench. And if you don't acknowledge the icy glare, he will come over and icy glare you in the face.
He really was fantastic. A master motivator is sort of the way I view it. Because you wanted to play well because you were deathly afraid of the consequences of not playing well.
Playing in fear.
Yeah, playing in fear. Exactly. But not necessarily fear in a bad way. I mean, but in a good way. Well, as good as a way as playing in fear can be, I suppose. It's not necessary. Look, it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. But he was equal opportunity, too. He picked on his stars as much as he picked on everyone else. And if you take a look at Greg Popovich at San Antonio, that's what makes him a good coach. You see him out there chewing out Tim Duncan and chewing out Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili as much as he chews out the last guy on the bench.
Yes.
So you had that. But, yeah, this whole wide receiver thing's just a mess for Michigan State. And we'll see what happens this year. It's The funny thing is, you know, the offensive line coming together is going to be more important. The running back situation shaking itself out is going to be more important. The quarterbacks getting right is going to be more important. But I feel like, DB, I have much more confidence in that process of the quarterbacking situation working itself out and the running back situation working itself out. And even the offensive line situation, not that they'll be dominant or anything like that, but at least working itself out to the point where you can have you can run effective offense. The one question mark that scares me, where I look at it and say, yeah, I have no idea how this is going to shape out, is the receiver position. I that's just how little confidence I in that position I have right now.
Yeah, I agree, and I think a lot of Spartans fans agree. You get past Aaron Burbridge, who also had his share of struggles last year and in the spring game. And the spring game was most alarming to me. I mean, it didn't look like anything had changed from the previous season. So I certainly hope that the Spartan receivers eat their Wheaties this summer and figure out what's going on, because we could be in for another long season. And this is not the kind of season that you want to have be long, because the schedule sets up nicely for the Spartans in terms of not saying it's easy, but you know, it could be a pretty good year if things go well.
Yeah, I got a bit of sad news to pass along here. Maria Sharapova has been eliminated from Wimbledon, which means that we're not going to get the great pre-match press conference between Maria Sharapova and Serena Williams that I was hoping for. I'm crushed, because those two going after each other's boyfriends was great theater.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the ratings would have been at an all-time high if those two had met somewhere.
I mean, that was like WWE stuff. It was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. And even through the fake apologies, you could tell that the tension was still there.
Yeah. And by the way, give it up for the boyfriend, current boyfriend of Maria Sharapova, former boyfriend, apparently, of Serena Williams. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like back-to-back championships right there.
He's going for the triple. He's going for the triple crown, baby.
I don't know who else you add to the mix to make it the triple crown, but I mean, that's a two-run homer right there. I mean, good for him.
Going for the cycle.
Going for the cycle. Oh, my goodness. Just fantastic work. I mean, that's a couple of aces right there.
The tennis world. Yes. Well, you know, Maria may be the odd woman out at some point, and who knows? It could be the latest hot young Russian or European phenom next.
I don't know, but good for him. We salute you here at Sparty Talk.
Yes.
All right. So, but you seem to be in agreement then that this wide receiver is just, you're right. The spring practice didn't seem like a huge improvement. I mean, they looked a little better, but it didn't seem like a huge improvement. And so that's easily, and it's weird because we're not talking about the defense, because the defense is awesome. We know they're awesome and they're going to be fine. And so this is all about how much offense can Michigan State generate. And yeah, if the wide receivers step up and play well, then good for them. I mean, that's what they need to do. I mean, if they step up and play well, this offense has the potential to be really good. But we need to see improvements. I mean, large improvements for them in terms of separation and pass catching ability. I think they tend to run the right routes, which is step one in the process. Run the right route, get separation, catch the ball. And so I think they got part one down pretty well. It's part two and three that they're working on. And I feel like there's talent there. They're just not putting it together at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they run the right route and they drop the ball, but they create separation. Other times they create separation and drop the ball. It's not all at once.
Well, these are the times right now in the summer with Andrew Maxwell and Connor Cook and these receivers to get their timing down again. Hopefully they'll come into fall camp ready to go.
Yeah, And I think it's good. And if they can find if they can go do a 7-on-7 against some of the participants in the dwarf games at Michigan State, they'll be pretty sharp going in.
That'd be great if Mark D'Antonio brought in the dwarves to harass the receivers during fall camp.
At some point, like, the dwarf community is going to get pissed off at us, DB. I'm just throwing that out there.
You mean they're going to get pissed at us? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
Yes. And if you want to add insult to injury, you could go find the 1976 song by Randy Newman called Short People and play that during every podcast.
Oh, good grief.
Oh yeah!
I'll tell you what I heard for the first time. I heard it on Mike and Mike of the Morning actually a couple days ago. Chuck Berry's "My Dingling." I had never heard that before.
That is a great song, Satchmo.
Wow, is it a good song?
And it is so full of entendres, isn't it?
Oh yeah, entendres double and triple. Yes.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that's Chuck Berry. He's an interesting guy, to say the least.
Yeah, no, definitely interesting. I can't believe I've gone this far in life and not heard this song. I felt ashamed of myself. I was embarrassed.
Everybody's familiar with the you know, standard Chuck Berry songs like Johnny B. Goode and those sorts of things. Chuck Berry, by the way, is still alive. I was looking that up. He's 86 years young, Chuck Berry.
Oh, good for Chuck Berry. But did you know that "My Dingling" was Chuck Berry's only number one hit?
That I did not know. That's an interesting trivia question.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was stunned when I found that out.
Speaking of trivia, later in the show, Satchmo, if we have time, I'm going to hit you with one.
Oh, I'm ready.
It's Michigan State.
I'm ready to bring the pain. Speaking of pain, Adrian Payne. We'll get back to football because I got a couple other football things, but I just brought Adrian Payne coming back to Michigan State. But that's not what I wanted to say. Speaking of pain, I was just going to say NBA draft is tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Are you excited at all for this?
I am not excited in the least. And I guess maybe, I don't know. I mean, if there was a Spartan player in it, or, you know, like the year LeBron, you know, that draft class, you know, it was intriguing. But no, that's why I'm not excited at all. Are you?
Yeah, there's no Spartans really that are going to be drafted. Yeah, no, take it back. We're ignoring Dark Knicks, and it'll be cool. It would be nice to see Dark Knicks get drafted.
Yeah. Do you think he will?
I think so. I think he could be second round pick.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he'd be a second round pick. He's got quick feet. He's got quick feet. Good game around the rim, and he rebounds well. And yeah, you need bodies that bang. I mean, seriously, do you think Miami Heat would have rather had Derek Nix when they were playing against Chicago this season?
Oh yeah.
I mean, at least he would have. I mean, in Indiana, I mean, who do you want, Derek Nix or Chris Bosh? Well, you want Derek Nix because at least Derek Nix could bang Hibbert and give away six fouls. Or you'd rather have Birdman Anderson? And no, you want Derek Nix. And so there's a role for Derek Nix, I think, out there. Yeah, I mean, Chris Bosh is way better than Derek Nix, so that's a bad comparison. But you need a backup center. You need a backup guy that can bang, especially in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, I think there's a spot for him in the league. He's a very good passer, and people are going to love that.
Yeah, well, and you know, the Spartans are developing a reputation with players like that. You know, with Draymond Green before and. You know, big forwards, so that helps Michigan State's cause, certainly. Yeah,
that certainly does. All right, that's just a little digression. I just wanted to touch on that. Back to the football for a second. Brady Hoke's at it again, DB.
Good grief.
Brady Hoke just needs to keep his mouth shut, really. But he doesn't apparently he doesn't think that much about SEC football. And didn't hesitate to say so on a Cleveland radio show. Hoke told the station, I think people get a little overzealous when they think the SEC is the only conference where they play football. I think when you look at the track record of the Big Ten, we play awfully good football. I believe in this conference, and everyone's going to recruit the way they need to recruit for their school. It's all different. And look, there's no way to win this battle, DB, with the SEC. There's just no way, because as long as they're winning every national championship, there's just no way to do it. I think the SEC is more top-heavy than the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten probably has better depth from top to bottom. But I think the top three or four teams in the SEC are much better than the top three or four teams in the Big Ten. Now, that's not always the case. Look, Michigan State beat Georgia when those were two of the better teams in each of the conferences. And, I mean, that was an outstanding Michigan State football team. And they went down and they beat Georgia and they proved it. And the Big Ten has beaten the SEC in a variety of different bowl games. But I think that's more – but when you get the top of the Big Ten, DB, versus the top of the SEC, there's a definite talent differential there. And I don't think it makes sense to run away and hide from it. It's just there. And it's going to stay there. And Drew Sharp actually wrote a nice column about this in the Detroit Free Press. But it's going to stay there as long as the best high school players of the country come out of the South. They're going to go to school in the SEC. It used to be the best high school players in the country came out of the Midwest. And when they came out of the Midwest, the Big Ten was king. And now that they're coming out of the South, the SEC is king. It's just the way it is. That isn't to say there isn't good football being played in both conferences. There is. I think the Big Ten is probably deeper top to bottom, but I think the SEC's top four are much better in any given year than the Big Ten's top four.
Yeah, and we're talking about, when you say top four, you're talking about Alabama, LSU, and Florida, Georgia?
Alabama, LSU, and pick whatever two other teams are in the top four that year.
Oh, okay. So you're not consistently saying it's always Georgia or always Florida?
No.
Ooh, whoever else. Okay.
Yeah, if you take the top four teams in the SEC any given year and you put them up against the top four teams in the Big Ten in a given year, I'd say probably of that top four, I think the SEC is pretty good, especially in the top two. They're significantly better. And the three and four are usually a little better than the Big Ten's three and four. Usually, not always, but pretty consistently. But then when you go down 5 through 10, 5 through 11, 5 through 12, you get into a situation where I think the Big Ten's actually better than the SEC when you line them up that way. So does that mean the Big Ten is as good as the SEC? The top of the SEC is better than the top of the Big Ten. The middle and bottom of the Big Ten is better than the middle and the bottom of the SEC.
Yeah.
What does that say about the conferences?
You put your finger on it, Satchmo. I mean, it's that reputation. It's where the kids are coming from, and it's really just, you know, who's at the end of the year, who's winning those championships. And they're coming from that conference for one reason or another. Does that mean that their whole conference is superior to the Big Ten and everybody else? No, it does not mean that. It just means Alabama, and for that matter, LSU probably on some level, are sort of sitting there maybe above everybody else, not only in their own conference, but everybody else. It's almost like they're their own conference, and then you throw everybody else in there. Yeah. I mean, each conference has their own share of really good teams. You're not going to slight even Oregon. You're not going to slight, you know, well, when they were really good, USC.
By the way, breaking news from today, Oregon on probation.
Ooh, well, we sort of saw that coming. Did it list the punishment or the what's
Yeah, there's
happen?
There's no postseason ban.
Interesting.
But they are on probation, and I'm pulling up the punishment right now. 3 years probation.
Well, while you're pulling that up, we know that's why Chip Kelly got out of there, although he really sure did waffle about that situation before he left for the Eagles, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he went back and forth on it. So, let's see, public reprimand and censure, 3 years probation, 18-month show cause order for the former head coach, which means he basically can't work in college football for 18 months without proving that he's an ethical coach. 1 year show cause order for the former assistant director of operations. Reduction of initial football scholarships by one from the maximum allowed, 25, during the 2012-13 and 2013-2014. Well, that's just a slap on the wrist, DB.
Yeah, I thought these were more serious violations, Satchmo. Well, this sounds like they kind of got off the hook.
Yeah, reduction of total football scholarships by one from the maximum allowed, 85, during 2013 and 2014 and 2015-2016. Reduction of official paid football visits from 56 to 37. All right, that's going to hurt him a little bit in recruiting. Reduction permissible evaluation of days from 42 to 36. So they're losing 6 days on the recruiting trail. In the grand scheme of things, not huge. It'll hurt him a little bit.
I'm actually surprised, aren't you?
Yeah, this is slap-alicious right here.
Yeah.
I mean, Maria Sharapova lobbed a bigger bomb at Serena Williams than the NCAA did at Oregon. It's just... this is nothing. This is absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
All right, so... But you know, here's the thing with Brady Hoke, though. When you get this whole Big Ten SEC question, just dodge it. Don't be a dope and start this up. I mean, between the chicken comment for Notre Dame and this, I saw someone draw this comparison. I'm starting to think it's a good one. Is Brady Hoke the Rex Ryan of the Big Ten?
Well, he's got a foot fetish. I'm just saying.
Might as well throw it out there.
Well, you know, it's funny, and the SEC fans are just going to laugh at him and the conference because, the scoreboard would indicate, Mr. Hoke, that you got yourself pasted by the Alabama Crimson Tide at the outset of last season and at the end of the season with the most vicious hit in college football history just about on one of your running backs by
South Carolina's Javendis Clowden, yeah.
Yeah. So, no. Scoreboard there, Mr. Hoke.
Huh. Yeah, it. All right. So let's stop talking about the Rex Ryan of the Big Ten. Let's move on to another.
Go ahead, David. On Brady Hoke, though, good for a second. Just real quick, recent news that has developed out of Ann Arbor, Satchmo, that two promising recruits, one of whom is Javon Ringer's brother who committed to Michigan, have left the program and are going to Ferris State? WTF, Satchmo.
Ferris State.
Why?
Maybe there wasn't enough food in the buffet left for him. I don't know.
But these guys were supposed to be, like, part of this whole big, huge blue-chip class that they got. And what do you make of this? I mean, people leaving like that and going to Ferris State, of all things.
Well, maybe they look at the incoming class and they say, you want to know what? I'm not going to get playing time.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the first thing.
In the pros, it's all about the Benjamins. In college, it's all about the minutes.
Yeah.
Unless you play for Florida or Miami when it's all about the Benjamins.
It's not you can't cut it in the NFL having played for Division II or 1A or whatever Ferris State is school. I mean, certainly enough guys have, but it's curious to me, not only that Michigan's starting to lose these kids right off the bat, but and I guess playing time might be, you know, just like Kyle Carrick, you know, looking around saying, yeah, I'm not going to see the field much. But then also, why Ferris State? Like, what's going on there?
Well, I'm guessing that they were restricted on where they were allowed to, the types of schools they were allowed to apply for a transfer, or They decommitted, and so Ferris State. Maybe they'll be two sports star. They'll play a little hockey too.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Maybe we'll see more. Maybe we'll hear more about Ferris State in the coming years. You could be right. don't know anything. I have no idea. I know you're making a joke. I was trying to be fair to the Bulldogs, but I have no idea who the coach is. I don't know anything about Ferris State football at all.
Look, Ferris State, new state power. Bring them on.
Well, pretty soon we won't be able to play schools like that, Satchmo. I thought that with the scheduling in college football, that particularly in the Big Ten at least, that we were going to try to get away from playing lower division schools.
Yeah, I think we are. I think Michigan State is, and I think the Big Ten is in general. I have no idea why they transferred. Look, the Ferris State thing is really odd, but, I mean, where else? I mean, I guess they would let them go to Central Florida or something like that. I don't know.
Weird.
It's tough to tell without knowing the conditions that were imposed on the transfer.
Yeah. Hey, while we're on the subject of college football, did you want to talk about these new Big Ten bowl tie-ins?
Yeah, I did, actually. So,
okay.
Michigan State, the Big Ten's done something interesting, and it's they want to be in Florida, DB. They want to be in Florida and they want to be in California because they've got alumni down in Florida and recruits down in Florida. And then they've got recruits in California and alumni in California. So that's what they want to do. So they're actually increasing their California bowl contingent here. So Michigan State's going to be in the Holiday Bowl now. In San Diego, which historically, DB, is one of the better bowls on the schedule. It's always been one of those high-scoring affairs. Yeah, it really is. It's in San Diego. It's great weather out there. You got the good golfing and all that sort of stuff. But it's had these like 46, 43, 52, 51 types of games. It's always been a high-scoring game. And part of that was you always had BYU playing out there. When they had those really good aerial attacks with Jim McMahon and then Ty Detmer and all of those guys. So the Holiday Bowl is being added in the Kraft Fight Hunger Bowl in Santa Clara, California. And that bowl is going to be played in the new stadium where the 49ers are moving, because the 49ers are no longer going to be playing in San Francisco. They're still going to be called the San Francisco 49ers, DP. They're just not going to be playing in San Francisco. Kind of like the New York Jets and the New York Giants, who don't play in New York but play in New Jersey.
So I'm going to comment on that for a second. And, yeah, this is a weird thing. And San Francisco is a weird – it's a good sports town. We've been out there, Satchmo, but it's weird. I mean, San Francisco 49ers –
Is it a good sports town?
They're going to be insane. Well, I think it is. They have very good fans, I think, for football yes, I think they are. I think they're a loyal, passionate, and I'm including Oakland in that equation, too.
Okay, so you see, I'm carving Oakland out, because I sort of view the Oakland fan base as being really good, and the San Francisco fan base as not being good.
Well, I think they're good fans. Let me clarify what I'm saying here. I'm not saying they're good as in decent people, because they're just as big a heathens as, their reputation is just as bad as, Philadelphia or, Boston fans or whatever. But in terms of them supporting their team, the way I see it here, the Giants fans fill that stadium every single night for ball games, and the 49ers come out religiously for the football.
So here's the interesting thing about Giants fans. First of all, you have to give the Giants credit for having a competitive baseball team for a while, and so having that winner has helped a lot. But going to Giants games in San Francisco has sort of become like going to Red Sox games was in the Boston area for several years. And now it's changed in the last year and a half. But you just can't get tickets to Giants games because it's a social event. It's a place to be seen and heard as much it is. It really is. It's a status symbol, being able to go to a Giants game out there. And so,
yeah.
Does that make them great fans because they sell at the ballpark every day? Maybe, but I get the sense that the moment these look, you take a look at what happened with the Red Sox last year. The team imploded last year. Season ticket sales dropped. All of a sudden, that list of thousands of people waiting for season tickets, all of a sudden they were able to start buying season tickets because a bunch of people dropped off the thing. And now I can pick up a ticket, DB, the day of a game.
Yeah,
you never used to be able to do that in Boston.
Actually, what I was getting at, though, here was, go ahead.
And San Francisco sort of strikes me as the same way. Now, I carve out Oakland and Golden State because if you take a look at the fan support the Raiders get or the fan support the A's get or the fan support Golden State gets, it's fantastic. It's passionate. It's loud, loyalist, diehards. And I don't get that same sense from the 49ers or the Giants. And when the 49ers were losing, the fans didn't care. And the stadium didn't care. The fans didn't care. The community didn't care. I just don't feel it.
Well, what I was getting at was less about that. We've gone off into a tangent. I didn't mean to do that. But what I was getting at here in Oakland, and I'll argue, is lumped together with them. And here's why: the geography of all these stadiums is what I'm getting at. San Francisco 49ers, is correct me if I'm wrong, are moving to San Jose, correct?
Well, Santa Clara, I think. I mean, it's almost
Santa
Clara.
Well, that's on the other side of the bay, yeah. Now, get this. The Golden State Warriors, Oakland's team for a long time, moving over into San Francisco. Heavy rumors that the Oakland A's want out of Oakland and down to San Jose. You see where this is going. The whole thing is all muddy.
Yeah, it is a mess.
Yeah. And I feel bad for the people in Oakland on that side because, you know, they're going to be left with the Raiders. And the Raiders have been screwed up for a long time. I mean, maybe they're going to start to come out of it now that the old man is, you know, 6 feet under. But they've been messed up for a while. Bad direction in general. Maybe it's going to change. But in the meantime, I mean, they're threatening to leave and go somewhere. I don't know. I don't know where the NFL is going to put them because they're out of places unless they move them to London or some hideous thing like that.
Yeah, and so the stadium in Santa Clara, for those of you that don't know the area, it's going to be south of San Francisco. And it's going to be sort of midway between Palo Alto, which is Stanford, and San Jose. So that's where you're looking at in terms of the stadium complex. DB, that's not, I mean, any way you cut it, that's not San Francisco.
No, not at all.
I mean, now, does this make them more the Bay Area team? Or, I mean, are we going to start calling them the, and to a certain degree, it reflects one of the realities out there, which is the support for the 49ers and the Giants, for that matter, is deep in that it's for the whole Bay Area. It's not just San Francisco. But if you're thinking about going to a bowl game, DB, you're going to be staying in San Jose. You're not going to be staying out in San Francisco.
Yeah. I mean, San Francisco is a trip you take, at the end of the trip or before, to go visit. It's not like it's really far away, but you're right. You're not staying there in the city. You're south of it or wherever that is. Far south of it.
No. Far south
of
it.
When did these – now it's just I'm getting back to the subject at hand, which is these bowl games. The bowl games that I see listed on ESPN's site for the coming season still indicate the current bowl games at the Big Ten.
It starts with the 2014 season.
Okay, so we have one more season of these Buffalo Wild Wings than the ones were, Motor City Bowl.
Yeah, so the Buffalo Wild Wings gone. That was in Tempe. Meineke Car Care gone. And likely gone is the Little Caesars being replaced by the Motor City, whatever they're going to call this bowl.
The Detroit Lions Bowl is the current name on it, I believe.
Yeah, the Detroit Lions Bowl.
That's going to be a disaster, but okay, whatever.
Yeah, and then you've got the Pinstripe Bowl that's going to be in New York.
Now that one makes a lot of sense. Because of Rutgers, and and that's going to be against the ACC, I believe. Correct.
Yeah, I think so. And then. Or you can say?
I was just about to ask, what conferences are the Big Ten, if you didn't say this, competing against in these other bowls?
The Pac-12.
Oh. All of them?
Yeah, the Holiday Bowl and the Kraft Hunger Bowl, both will pit them against Pac-12 teams.
And will the Big Ten be pulling out of their agreements with, like, this Houston Reliant Bowl and the Dallas Bowl, or are they still in that, too?
They're sticking with the Dallas. So the other bowls will be the Pinstripe Bowl, the Lions Bowl, then the Capital One Bowl, the Outback Bowl, and the Heart of Dallas Bowl.
Okay,
and they're also at
and
so they have a relationship with the Gator Bowl, and then so they're adding the Music City Bowl, and they'll alternate years between the Music City Bowl and the Gator Bowl.
Okay. Wow. Interesting with that, because the Gator Bowl is a New Year's Day game. The Music City Bowl, I don't think, is a New Year's Day game. I think that's one of those ones that's before New Year's.
Yeah, the Gator Bowl is a New Year's Day game, but it's the New Year's Day game nobody cares about. Well, I feel like there are two New Year's Day games that nobody cares about, the Gator Bowl and the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, and the Cotton Bowl's actually gotten moved now to try to be they seem like they're lobbying for it to be sort of a BCS game, because it's not on January 1 anymore.
Well, I think they're moving it back to January 1. I think that's the goal.
Oh, really? Because this year it's still listed as sort of on its own night. It actually would be competing against the Orange Bowl the way it's listed on the schedule this year.
Yeah. I think the goal is... Yeah, I think that's the goal, is to move it back. So, yes, the Heart of Dallas Bowl. Yeah, I mean, it's news to me. I didn't know Dallas had a heart. But it's...
Wow.
Yeah, so that's the bowl situation. New bowls lined up for the Big Ten. I think what this does is this aligns with the Big Ten's interest. They want to play. They want to be in front of their alumni. Where are their alumni? New York, Florida, and California. Where are their alumni not? Texas, for the most part, although they're still playing in Dallas and Arizona. So they got rid of Texas. They got rid of Arizona, except for Dallas. And they're in Florida and California. In New York. Those are the three places where their alumni are. That's where they want to play. And so that's what they're doing. So it makes sense from a conference direction. It's what the schools want out of it. And so that's what's happening there. And then the other thing, and just because I brought up Adrian Payne earlier in the show, but Adrian Payne did make the first cut for the U.S. team. He's trying out for...
Yeah, I'd like to bring that up. Yes, he did.
Yeah, and so good for him.
It
makes sense. Good experience. He's trying out for the World University Games. He's one of 16 finalists. There's a 12-man roster, so he still has to make a second set of cuts. And hopefully he makes the team, and that's a team that's going to go play in Russia. Just don't get on a Russian plane, Adrian. I mean, it's okay to travel to Russia. Just don't get on a Russian plane. Those things just fall apart.
And Payne, if you bump into Edward Snowden tournament, for God's sake.
Yeah. If you see the crazy guy in the airport, stay away.
Call security.
Call security. keep the CIA in speed dial. Just let them know. the coaching staff on this team, though, DB, is interesting. Bob McKillop is the head coach from Davidson, and John Beilein is the assistant coach.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think Beilein's going to get an up-close look at Payne's game and might come away with some good ways to defend him in the regular season.
Yeah.
But
are there any other Big Ten players of note on this roster?
Yeah, there are seven Big Ten players invited to try out. Indiana guards Yogi Ferrell and Will Sheehy, and Iowa forward Aaron White. They also made the Final 16. Minnesota guard Andre Hollins and Iowa guard Roy Devin Marble were cut. And then Purdue center A.J. Hammonds had to leave tryouts early in the week for an unspecified family situation. So the final 16 is Payne, Farrell, Sheehy, White, Doug McDermott from Creighton, Corey Jefferson from Baylor, Spencer Dinwiddie, Colorado, Devontae Gardner, Marquette, Trevion Graham, BCU, Jerry Grant, Notre Dame, Luke Hancock, Louisville, Tyler Hawes, BYU, Rodney Hood, Duke, Sean Kilpatrick, Cincinnati, Alex Kirk, New Mexico, and Chason Randall, Stanford. Doug McDermott's really good, DB. Really good. Guy can score. Tyler Hawes from BYU is really good. Alex Kirk is outstanding. There's some good basketball talent here. I don't think they're going to show this on TV anywhere, are they?
They won't show it on like the NBA network.
I hope so. It's the World University Games. They should show it somewhere.
ESPNU, maybe.
Yeah, I think that'd be good. We'll have to keep an eye out for it, because I think this has the potential to be a good tournament. But if it's on ESPNU, that means we have to listen to Fran Fraschilla. he's all right.
ESPN does have worse, yes. Real quick, speaking of ESPN, going back to college football, then we'll cover some of our other topics quickly. Kirk Herbstreit, Satchmo, I know you wanted to bring that up. He and Devin Gardner are lobbing Michigan, Ohio State at predictions at each other. Herbstreit saying that Ohio State is going to be in the Rose Bowl and all this stuff. What is this garbage about?
Yeah, see, Devin Gardner can do this because he actually plays for the team. And so he can go out and say the Wolverines should beat Ohio State this year. Kirk Herbstreit works for ESPN. He can't go out in a rally and guarantee that Ohio State's going to go to Pasadena. He just can't do that. Make your reservations because we are going to Pasadena. Shut up, Kirk.
Oh, boy. Yeah, maybe Kirk Herbstreit's turning into the Beano Cook. Maybe whatever he says like that is going to curse whoever.
are you trying to say that whoever Kirk Herbstreit picks will automatically lose?
Yes, and let's just hope it's the Buckeyes every single year.
See, between Brady Hoke and Kirk Herbstreit, you just want Michigan and Ohio State to lose.
Yeah.
You can't help it. I've got no problem with Devin Gardner saying the Wolverines will beat Ohio State this year. He's the quarterback of Michigan. He should say that. So I've got no problem with him saying that. I have no problem with the public declarations. Good for Devin Gardner. That's what he should be doing. Kirk Herbstreit, shut up.
Yeah, Kirk Herbstreit and Desmond Howard misused their positions on ESPN so badly to promote their school. It's just sickening.
It's awful, and it's tough because they're alumni of the school, and they want to cheerlead and they want to support it. But the moment you're given that platform by ESPN, you got to turn that off.
Yeah.
You've just got to turn it off. And so shut up, Kirk.
And, you know, there's this continuing effort on ESPN's part and their part to continue to prop up this Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. And I'm sorry, but how many meaningful games have they even played in the last, 15 years? I mean, maybe one or two?
Yeah, no, they haven't. No meaningful games. The Michigan-Ohio State rivalry has been the least interesting rivalry over the course of the last 10 to 12 years and 15 years. It's been the least interesting rivalry in the Big Ten. The Michigan State-Wisconsin rivalry has been better than that.
Yeah. I mean, Michigan and Ohio State did have the one year where Ohio State was one and Michigan was two, and Michigan lost the close game in Columbus. And, you know, we know how that worked. But other than that, I can't recall, you know, even very many interesting games, let alone anything that mattered for something.
Yeah, and it, and if things did matter, it only mattered for one team. It didn't matter for both. And the rivalry is not interesting unless it matters for both.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Sorry. It's no fun. You just need to stop. Kirk needs to shut up. Desmond needs to shut up. Just go away. And to me, one of the beautiful things about Magic Johnson on ESPN is Magic loves Michigan State, and there is not a better spokesperson for Michigan State than Magic Johnson. Yet Magic Johnson's able to separate the two. And he does a very good job of it, whereas I don't think Kirk does, and I don't think Desmond does. And look, they want lessons how to do it. You just walk up and ask. He's on the set there. You can go talk to him.
Yeah.
Just get some advice, because he does it really well, and those two don't.
Good.
One more football note, by the way. Mark D'Antonio, I like him. I like them a lot. They caught up with Free Press caught up with them earlier this week. And they're like, so what are you going to do next? He's like, yeah, I'm going to spend some time being a regular person right now. It's like, go on vacation, be with the family, just be a regular person.
Yeah.
And because yes, he should. It's the one downtime. You know, they put in the playbooks. They've gotten the practices in. The recruiting's done for now. I mean, there's some recruiting, but that's all down the line. So this is 1 or 2 weeks to relax, and good for him, and I hope he gets to do it. My question to you, DB, is if you were shopping in Myers over there on Lake Lansing Road, and you're shopping, and you know you're looking at your different types of you're checking out the bananas, and you're checking out the price of bananas. Mark D'Antonio walks by with a shopping cart. He's got a little bit of lettuce, and he's got some spinach and tomatoes in there. Are you doing a double take, or are you just going about your business?
Like any fan, Satchmo, when I see somebody famous in a store, which I think we all had at one point in time, yes. I'm doing a double take. I'm also looking to see what he's got in the cart.
You get an Instagram a picture of what's in Mark D'Antonio's cart?
No, I don't know if I'm one of those, although there are plenty of people who would stop and take an Instagram photo of themselves with Coach. But I actually got a Nick Lidstrom, just digressing for a second. I was in Target in Novi, Michigan one time near where I once lived, and I saw Nick Lidstrom with sort of that defenseman scowl he had coming right towards me with his cart. Looked like he was going to, you know, two-hand me in the face. And just kind of nod at him like, you know, like I was, Andrew Shaw, just kind of skating by him, you know, just kind of nod at him like, yeah, how you doing, Nick? Kind of like that, you know. But I kind of glanced at his cart just to see he had a lot of toiletries and things like that.
By the way, that's funny. That's absolutely hilarious. you mentioned Andrew Shaw. Toiletries. Yeah. He was probably going on a road trip. you mentioned Andrew Shaw. The iconic photo, at least for me, of this whole Stanley Cup run in the Stanley Cup Finals is a bloody Andrew Shaw. His face, just blood pouring down his face, lifting the Stanley Cup. How fantastic. Do you know the picture I'm talking about?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It is an absolutely fantastic picture. It is the defining moment of what of this year's Stanley Cup playoffs for me. And it really symbolizes what the Cup is about. I mean, here's a guy that took a puck to the face earlier in the game, collapsed in a heap. I thought he was dead for a minute because it didn't look like he was breathing. NBC, by the way, NBC sucks. Can we just look? Doc Emmerich's great. Pierre, all right. Doc Emmerich's great. Eddie Olchuk is okay. Pierre Maguire's awful. But NBC just sucks. They cut away from the sort of lifeless body of Shaw. They go to commercial, and then they come back and don't say anything. Like the injury never happened. We never saw people coming out to tend him. We don't know anything. And the next thing we know, he's back on the bench.
Yeah. Yeah.
Horrendous.
I totally agree with that. And as much as we like to pile on the Canadians and CBC and all that, I will say this. CBC is very good with those sorts of details in the game and the camera shots and the technology. They are right in the players' faces and eyeballs and much more on top of that stuff and much more thorough with the follow-up than NBC. That is one thing that really bugs me about NBC, all Pierre Maguire and Ed Olchek aside, who I cannot stand, and Mike Milbury. I mean, I love Keith Jones. I respect him, and I appreciate his opinion. And, I like some of the other announcers they have call the playoff games. Like Dave Strader is great. He's one of the best play-by-play men around. I love him. He'd be the A guy if Doc Emmerich wasn't there, truthfully.
Doc Emmerich's a Hall of Famer. Doc Emmerich's outstanding.
Yeah. Doc Emmerich's outstanding, but if Doc wasn't there for some reason, Dave Strader would be my choice, or I'd go back to Gary Thorne or somebody like that. But, other than Doc, there's not a lot there for NBC. I mean, they dropped the ball. They dropped the puck, if you will, a long way.
Yeah, it was just awful. But you're going to ask a question, DB. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you, unless you were done with that, what you thought of the whole Stanley Cup final, just real quick.
All right. I'm going to say something that's unpopular with Wings fans. I'm glad the Blackhawks won. And it's not because I've actually taken a while for me to sort out what I felt about this year's NHL playoffs. And this doesn't have anything to do with me living in the Boston area and just having to live around Bruins fans and that sort of thing. It really doesn't, because there were elements of this Bruins team that I liked. I like Chara. I love Torrey Krug. This was a good Bruins team, fun to watch. But the reason why I'm glad Chicago won is Chicago was the better team. And I think it's important in hockey for the better team to win. And not only for the better team to win, for the team that played hockey attacking with speed and creative passing and long passes and finding different ways to score goals rather and played a highly skilled game. I think it's important in hockey for those teams to win. First of all, it adds validation to the Red Wings approach to hockey, and the Red Wings are one of the few teams that tries to win hockey this way. Look, there aren't that many teams that try to win hockey games the way Detroit does. Pittsburgh does. Chicago does. There are only a handful. The rest of the league prefers to play the way the Bruins do, which is play big. Hit hard, and if that doesn't work, hit harder. And Chicago said, no, that's not how you win. And they showed it. You attack with speed. You attack with skill. You take a game that's a 2-1 game in a span of 17 seconds, you turn it into a 3-2 game. And you keep attacking in waves, and you keep coming, and you wear them down, and you roll over the four lines, and you build depth. And not only do you build depth, but you don't have a hitting line and then a scoring line, anything like that. No, you have four lines that can skate. And four lines that can pass, and four lines that can shoot, and four lines that can score, and four lines that can go along the boards and win, and defensemen, and three pairs of defensemen that can move the puck and pass the puck and headman the puck. This, it is a good thing for hockey that Chicago won this series. It really is. They could fix the officiating. The NHL will be on to something, but I think it's good for hockey. To me, the right team won. I'm glad the Blackhawks won. Not a popular thing to say, but I think it's important, because if the Bruins win, what are you going to get? You're going to get more teams trying to copy the Bruins, get bigger, stronger, less skill. And to me, the NHL is at its best when you have fast, skilled guys playing.
Yeah. Chicago, I agree with your points. And just sort of to add to that, too, Chicago, definitely, we talked about it before during the Red Wings series. I mean, that mix of skill and speed, very solid goaltending. I mean, you could argue that Corey Crawford probably could have won the Conn Smythe Trophy, I think, Sashmo.
You could have made the argument. If there hadn't been so much written about his glove hand, there would have been a more convincing argument to be made by that. Look, I think Kane was it Kane that won, or
he
was the right choice. He elevated his game in the last two rounds of the playoff. And it was just phenomenal. And the hands he showed on a couple of goals where he just had less than a quarter second to get the puck from behind the red line, in front of the red line, and tuck it inside the corner. He just showed remarkable skill and hands, and always tough on the puck, always moving to the open areas in the ice, always dangerous, keeping his stick on the ice, always ready to shoot. He's the very definition. If you ask kids, who do you want to emulate? If you're playing a forward, you want to emulate someone like Kane. He was fantastic.
Yeah, I think overall, this Stanley Cup final was one of the better finals that I can remember in the last several years. The Detroit-Pittsburgh 2 years in a row was also good, but the Chicago-Boston matchup was intense, and it had all the elements of a good series that the NHL has kind of lacked off and on for so long. I mean, and not to say that they've all been bad, but it definitely will stand out when you look back at it.
Yeah, it'll stand out. The one thing that bothers me is the officiating. The officiating's god-awful, right?
Hitting from
behind, it doesn't matter where in the ice it is. It doesn't matter what game it is. It doesn't matter what time, and it should be illegal. You can't hit people from behind. You can't hit people in the head from behind. You shouldn't be able to cross-check after the play. A hooking is a hook. If they're going to hook it, look, it should be the same call in the regular season in the playoffs. This whole idea, and look, I know hockey purists love it. You swallow the whistle in the playoffs, and the game's officiated differently. You want to know what's stupid? Stop it.
Yeah.
Just stop it. Officiate the game correctly.
Yeah. Lots of problems in the NHL with the officiating.
Yeah. If it's tripping, it's tripping. Call it.
Yeah.
Right. Call the cheap and dirty stuff behind the play. Call the obstructions. Call the hooks. Call the trips. Call the slashes. Call the hits from behind. Clean this game up.
Since we're on the subject real quick, and we're talking Spartan sports here on Sparty Talk at blogtalkradio.com/Spartyon and our Twitter feed, which I am tweeting out some of our things here at Sparty Talk. The Duncan Keith and Torrey Krug, great to see them. And how about all the accolades, not only that both received, especially Torrey Krug, but then, Sashmo, you heard Doc Emmerich make a mention of Spartan hockey during the game six.
It was very funny because Krug and Keith were going after each other after the play, and they were exchanging some blows. And Doc Emmerich's like, a pair of Spartans going at it. And then he goes, which was very funny. He goes, I'm sure Michigan State University Athletic Director Mark Hollis has already been on the phone with them, asking them for money to refurbish Mud Arena. And he goes, it's been long. And then he threw out a little line, said, it's time. It's been long enough. It needs it. And so this is a man that's clearly knowledgeable and has been knowledgeable about Michigan State sports, but more importantly, it looks like he spent some time in MunDB.
Doc is a big hockey fan in general, and he called some college games earlier this year when the NHL was on strike, so I think maybe he and Pierre McGuire may have visited Mun at one point this season to call a game.
The one thing, all right, it's one thing to know the university. That's fine. You figure a good announcer is going to do that, especially an announcer like Doc, who likes to drop the university names in his play-by-play call. That's one of his signature moves. Although he tends to do it primarily, DB, for Midwestern universities. He doesn't do it as much for the BCs and BUs.
Yeah. While you're talking about him, I'm just kind of curious where he's from. I'm going to look it up. Do you know where he's from, though?
I don't know where he's from.
He's a Midwest guy. I'm going to see here real quick.
I think he's a Pittsburgh guy.
Well,
I think he's from
Indiana.
Pittsburgh. Oh, he's from
Indiana. And he went to school at Miami in Ohio.
Okay, so he's a Midwestern guy.
Yep. And Bowling Green.
He
got a PhD from Bowling Green.
Yeah, so he's a Midwestern guy. I think he might make his home in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure.
Okay. He's the voice of the New Jersey Devils when he's not calling NHL on NBC. I know that.
Yeah, and so, he's got Midwestern roots, and it comes through clearly. I don't know why I thought he made his home in Pittsburgh. Maybe it's because he's a Pirates baseball fan.
Maybe. You might be also thinking of Mike Lang, the famous Pittsburgh Penguins announcer who
I'm not thinking of him. Yeah, I think he's a Pirates baseball fan. That might be it. Anyway, it was very funny. He's clearly been in Mon. He clearly knows it needs renovation. All right, and it's one thing to know the university. It's another thing to know the athletic director. Clearly knew it. And this wasn't forced knowledge either. He just sort of dropped it in there as casually as possible. And it almost makes you wonder whether Mark Hollis had approached Doc Emmerich about dropping some money on the renovation. I don't know. It was very bizarre. It was this brief 30-second tangent in the NHL Game 6 of the finals.
Yeah,
it was really bizarre.
Or Tom Anastas. I mean, he's very connected to even the pro coaches and broadcasters and everything like that. You mentioned Duncan Keith and Torrey Krug going at each other. I will tell you from history real quick, and you may even remember this, Satchmo, because it was in the last 10 years. They wouldn't be the first Spartans to tangle or get close in a game. You may recall Anson Carter, when he played, and Rod Brindamore actually got into a fight one time.
I do remember that. And
yeah.
The fun thing is Anson Carter, not noted for being a fighter. Rob Brindamore, he would get his hands dirty and that sort of thing. I mean, look, the Spartan you'd expect to fight with Jim Cummins, right?
Yeah. In that time frame,
yeah. I mean that's the Spartan that you would expect to fight, not Anson Carter. And Rob Brindamore, not really, although you could see him fighting more than you would Anson Carter.
Yeah. And for the record, Brindamore and Carter never teammates, although if Brindamore had stayed at Michigan State for 4 years, they would have crossed each other. Brindamore would have been a senior and Carter would have been a freshman at that point, but Brindamore was one very, very fabulous year for the Spartans.
Yes, well, Brindamore is a senior and Anson Carter is a freshman. Had that ever materialized, that could have been the greatest scoring line in the history of Michigan State. Just throwing that out there.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, oh my, indeed.
Speaking of Spartans in the news, DB, just turning a little bit. Well, first of all, what do you think of the Stanley Cup Finals?
Overall, great series. Enjoyed it, and also Twitter Nation exploded with Gary Bettman being booed, and for better or worse, people seem to like that for whatever reason.
Okay, so here's my question. There are lots of legitimate reasons to boo Gary Bettman, but booing Gary Bettman's become a tradition at the presentation of the Cup. It really has. It happens every year, and it's happened every year since like 1999 or 98, maybe going back to 95, who knows. But it just happens every year. It's happened as long as you and I have covered hockey, DB, and we've been covering hockey a long time. So do you think the people in the stands know why they're booing Bettman, or do they just do it now because that's what you're supposed to do?
I think hockey fans have just glommed onto this thing that they're not really sure about Gary Bettman, but there's this underlying thing that Gary Bettman sort of just sucks for whatever reason, and it's just something that you do.
Yeah, I get
the
feeling
that
there's...
It's like booing the mayor when he comes out. It's like booing the mayor when he comes out to throw the ball at the opening day or whatever.
Yeah, I get the sense that there's a core constituency that really dislikes Gary Bettman, and they're booing him for a reason. And then there's a group of people that are just booing him because they know you're supposed to boo Gary Bettman whenever he shows up.
Yes, it's kind of like Thanksgiving parades. It's a sort of a tradition, and you do it. Although I have made the suggestion before, Satchmo, that what they could do with these deciding games is have a notable alumni player of some stature from whatever teams are playing in the Cup in attendance for the deciding games, and have that particular person award the Stanley Cup to make the announcement after the commissioner hands off to them. So in this case, perhaps could have had some notable Blackhawk or Boston Bruin, if it were, would have been interesting to see Bobby Orr
and the Chicago
Blackhawk.
Well, Kornheiser and Wilbon suggested the same thing on PTI. They're like, Stern brought out Bill Russell to hand out the trophy this year. I mean, no one's going to boo Bill Russell. It's a similar concept. And so Kornheiser and Wilbon, one of them said, well, what about Phil Esposito? He played for both the Bruins and the Blackhawks. And so it turns out, it turns out that he hates both teams.
Okay, maybe not a great choice. Actually, Phil Esposito, wait a minute now. Phil Esposito, his brother played for the Blackhawks, Tony Esposito.
Maybe it was Tony Esposito that played for both teams. I thought it was Phil Esposito that played for both
teams. Okay, I'm gonna look that up because Phil Esposito played defense for the Boston Bruins.
Oh, yep. Here it is. He says, here's the quote from Phil Esposito. I didn't choose to leave Chicago. I didn't choose to leave Boston. I signed a contract in Boston for less money than I could have gotten from joining WHA. I could have made millions doing that. And you know how they repaid me? 3 weeks later, they traded me to the New York Rangers. He says, screw the Bruins and the Blackhawks.
And then he's a Rangers guy all the way, yeah.
And he says, Stanley Cup meeting between the old team doesn't mean, and then he drops an S-bomb.
Ooh, bitter party of one,
one. You want to know the truth? He says, this series doesn't mean shh to me. Gotta love it.
Ooh, ouch.
I have no feeling for these teams. There's nothing emotional about it. They both got rid of me. They both got rid of me, traded me, so screw them.
Yeah. See, and that's hilarious, by the way, but what I think what you do is whatever arena you're in, so say you're in Boston for game six, you have your notable Bruin there, and he's going to award the cup to the Blackhawks no matter what. That softens the boos from the crowd and everything like that, and people will roar when Bobby Orr or whomever from the Bruins past comes on the ice, even if they're giving the cup to the Blackhawks. It's still kind of a cool moment, no matter what. It just happens to be in their rink. Or, you know, if it was in Chicago, I don't know if Stan Mikita's still alive, but you can get somebody, if he is, like that, or Al Secord or Dennis Savard or somebody that didn't win a cup but still notable Black, Tony Esposito, you know, notable Blackhawk player from the past to hand off that cup to whomever it would have been.
I'm just glad he didn't suggest Tony Amonte.
I said notable Blackhawks.
All right. While we're on the subject of Spartans in pro sports, Seth Mitchell, DB.
Yeah.
He won his last fight out. He was, you know, fighting against Jonathan Banks. He'd lost previously to Banks. That was his first loss, the first time he got knocked down, actually, I think, or knocked out. I wouldn't say knocked down, but it was the only loss of his career 7 months ago. And Seth Mitchell came out, and he didn't knock him out. He was fighting pretty carefully, is what I understood. The fight was over at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, and so there were a lot of boos coming down on him. Because they wanted a more aggressive Seth Mitchell, but he fought it closely. And the fight was close on two scorecards. It was 115-112 and 114-112 on two scorecards. And the third judge had it 117-109, which isn't close at all. And And so he fight, he outfought him, and his quote after was, "I believe I showed today I'm not only a puncher and a brawler, but if I need to box and win a fight, I can do that." And I understand what he's saying, DB, but I got to admit, I'm a little disappointed because I like Seth Mitchell, the brawler. Seth Mitchell, the boxer, is a lot less interesting than Seth Mitchell, the brawler, when he came out just looking to kill you. But this is probably a good step for his career. He understands that he's starting to fight people that can punch back. And so he's got to be careful and play good defense, but then he's got to unload with power when he has the opportunity. And that's smart. I think it's good for his evolution as a boxer. The only thing is he's got to remember he's a power puncher, so he's got to remember to do that. This isn't a points competition per se. But Mitchell threw 471 punches, and Banks only threw 261. So Banks needed more activity.
Yeah, I think the crowd booing speaks to what you were saying about Seth. They want to see the brawler too. They don't want to see the careful Seth Mitchell. But that was his strategy. And the question I have now is, Seth Mitchell's reclaimed these belts, Thatchmo. What's next for him? What's his next big fight going to be?
Yeah, it's tough to say because he's moving up on the list of contenders in the heavyweight division, but he still needs a couple of sort of big fights before he moves into the big time. So he's not quite there yet. I think people are going to look around and try and figure it out right now. And figure out what happens. He's going to take a bunch of weeks off, but I don't think they have something set yet. I think they're looking for another fight in September. And the problem is Seth Mitchell's been going a long time between fights, and part of it was an injury situation, part of it was out of his control. But he's been going a long time between fights, and he needs to fight a little more regularly too. And if he does that, I think September seems around the time right for him. Maybe October. I could see him fighting maybe October, and he needs to start stepping up in quality of opponents too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure who wants to take him on either, because a lot of it is dependent on who actually wants to fight him. Because he's getting pretty good, but he's not completely polished yet. So you can't throw him out there with the top heavyweights in the world because he'll get killed. But I think he's moving to that rung below those guys. So he's not ready for the top heavyweights, but he can start breaking into that group where he says, all right, if he wins the next couple of fights, then you can see him in the ring against the top heavyweights. So I think he needs a couple of wins, a couple more wins against quality opponents before he really hits the big time.
Okay. Interesting to see what happens with Seth. Like to see former Spartans doing well, especially in sports that we don't talk about a lot.
Yeah. Look, I'm a boxing fan. I mean, I really am. And it's tough because boxing's just fallen by the wayside. MMA's killing it. People just don't care about boxing anymore. And there was a time, DB, when some of the best athletes in the world, the most famous athletes, and it wasn't that long ago, were boxers. I mean, especially coming out of the Detroit area. I mean, with Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard, and you had all these wonderful boxers that come through there.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember going to the motor show in Detroit, down in Cobo, and all of a sudden, people just start getting out of the way. And it's like, whoa, why are people getting out of the way? People don't get out of the way for anyone in here. And there's Tommy the Hitman Hearns walking down the aisle. And everyone was just in awe. And that's the way it used to be. And it's just not like that anymore.
No, not at all. Nope.
Yeah,
we got about 6 minutes left. Should we gloss over? Do we want to get into Justin Verlander today, or save that for another podcast? And I know we had the trivia question. We had your Men's Warehouse. You want to save Verlander and see how he's doing in a few weeks?
Yeah, let's save the Verlander. We can save the Verlander for next week. because his problems aren't likely to fix themselves by next week. So, and how he's doing is going to be a sort of constant source of discussion. The Angels are visiting the Tigers right now, and then the Tigers go on the road to play the Rays and the Blue Jays. The Tigers committed 6 errors last night, TV. 6 errors in one game.
That's pretty bad.
Ugly. All right. Yeah. Needless to say, they lost. So let's do the trivia, and let's close on Men's Warehouse, because we opened the show with the Men's Warehouse joke.
And I just wanted to mention, we get a lot of feedback on our At Sparty Talk Twitter feed, and someday here, at some point, when we have a few extra moments here in the dead of the summer, we'll do tweeter feedback. There's been a lot of comments made to some of our remarks on Twitter over the past, and stuff that's still sort of timely or whatever. We'll dish that out and call some of you out for some of your comments, or try to answer them on the air, because some of them still bear answering, and we'll do that another time. I thought that would be a fun thing to do. But here's the trivia question. Here we go. This is obviously Spartan related. I found this in a, I won't tell you what sport, because that'll maybe say too much or whatever, but this is challenging. Which former Michigan State track star was hired by the Oakland Athletics baseball team as a pinch runner specialist, playing in 105 major league games without ever actually taking an at-bat?
All right. So a Michigan State University track star.
Yes.
Was hired by the Oakland Athletics as a pinch running specialist.
Yes.
And he appeared in 105 games without recording an official at bat.
Right. Right.
All right. So if you're a pinch-running specialist, of course you're going to appear in 105 games without recording an official at-bat, because you come in, you pinch-run, you don't pinch it, you don't get an at-bat, and then you're replaced when you go on the field. A track star from Michigan State. See, these are the types of things that... Wow, this is tough. I have no clue.
Do you want me to give you a... I knew this one wouldn't be tough. Do you want me to give you a hint as to the time period he might have played at Michigan State?
He was a track star at Michigan State. I'm assuming he was also a baseball or a football player at Michigan State as well.
Let's see here. I'm looking. Four-time All-American, won one NCAA title, 7 Big Ten titles, tied or broke the world record in 50 and 60-yard dashes. But actually, no. I think track was his big sport. I don't think he ever played football or basketball or baseball or any other sport for Michigan State that I see. Just track.
All right. So this is something that people did in the late 60s and early 70s. In fact, a couple of, for example, one of the Cowboys receivers, if I remember correctly, was an Olympic track athlete from back in this time, and went on to play in the NFL and caught and did decently. So I'm guessing late 60s, early 70s. So maybe he was on campus in the 68 to 72 range, DB. All right. Am I close? Am I in the right time frame?
You're in the right time frame as to when he played or when he attended Michigan State and was a track star, yes.
All right.
He is from the state of Michigan.
He is from the state of Michigan.
He's from Flint, actually.
Well, the only track star...
He went to school in Flint. He's not from Flint. He's actually originally from Mississippi.
All right. Well, the only track person I know from that time frame that came from Flint or came from the Flint area is Herb Washington.
Oh, my goodness gracious, Satchmo. You are the man. That's the
answer. You serious?
Yes. Herb Washington. Here are his major league stats for the Oakland A's. Across 1.5 seasons. 105 games. 0 at-bats. 33 runs scored. 31 stolen base. Part of the 1974 World Champion Oakland A's team.
That's insane.
Amazing that you picked that one up.
It's the only one I know. I had no choice.
Yeah, you after you whittled it down a little bit, you got it, though. I mean, you got it. Not a lot of Spartans would know that, but you got it.
Well, blind squirrel gets a nut every now and then.
Hey, you got the answer, so you came up with it. I would have struggled to get that right.
It's one of those things where... It's the only track person I know from back in that time, period. And the only reason I know him because he had those records that you were talking about, DB, and he's a bit of a legend on campus.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Too bad he never was able to catch a football I guess he could play baseball, although the A's simply had him there for his base running.
Yeah. All right. That was tough, DB.
Thank you. I knew that would be tough. As soon as I saw it, I said, I know that Satchmo is such a Spartan expert. And I said, I feel like I could stump him. And I almost did. I feel some level of stumpness on you on that one.
Yeah, no, you got me pretty good on that one. I'll get stumped on lots of things. So it's not even that. It's just dumb luck. That's a really good question. I felt like you know when Mike and Mike Buster only or Jason Stark does those trivia questions on Mike and Mike in the radio, and I never get any of them. And I felt like that. I felt like I was going through. It's just like, yeah, I got no clue. And that's exactly. It's like, all right, now I know how those guys feel. It's just like, yeah.
And
we'll take
by
a stab
the way,
in the dark.
Side note about Herb Washington right now. 6 or 7 years ago, he purchased the Youngstown, Ohio Steelhounds, a minor league hockey team, becoming one of the first African-American owners of a professional hockey league team in the United States.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's pretty impressive.
Yep.
Herb Washington. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
And get this. He owns most of the, if you go to a McDonald's in the Youngstown, Ohio area, he owns most of them there. He owns most of the franchises, McDonald's franchises, in the Youngstown, Ohio area.
Kind of like Bernie Streeter and Arby's in the D.C. area?
Yeah, that's a good analogy, yes, Bernie Streeter. If there are any Arby's around here in D.C., I don't even know that there are any Arby's in the district itself, but anyway... I haven't seen one lately.
Oh, people that were Ken Beatrice fans back in the day would have appreciated that. All right. So we got one thing to wrap up before we run out of show here, and that is George Zimmer. George Zimmer. So, DB, have you ever shopped at Men's Warehouse?
Absolutely. I just got a couple of new suits from Men's Warehouse.
Yeah, see, I think every professional at some point has shopped at the Men's Warehouse. And they had those cool commercials with the guy in the beard who sounds like he smokes 30 packs of cigarettes a day. And that's George Zimmer's. And the line he uses to close the commercials is, "You'll like the way you look, I guarantee it." So he founded Men's Warehouse. Do you want to know what Men's Warehouse did to him over the recently? They fired him. They fired the guy that guarantees that you'll like the way you look. They fired the old man. You can't do that, DB. That would be like, you know, that would have been like Michigan State firing Judd. You just can't do that. No, that would have been like Penn State firing Joe Pa. Now, I know there were a lot of people that wanted to at some point to fire Joe Pa, but you can't do that. You figure out a way to make it work, even if it's, yeah, you still get to be on the commercials and claim a paycheck, or you get to retire, or you can't fire him. And apparently he wanted to take the business in a different direction than the board, and that's all well and good. But you want to know what? You're a publicly traded company. If you don't like the guy that guarantees the way you look, vote him off the board, or take care of this in a shareholder meeting where the shareholders get a say in it. You don't fire George Zimmer. You just don't do it. I mean, that would have been like firing Kelsey Grammer from Frasier. You can't do that. He is Frasier. I mean, you fire him, the show goes. You fire George Zimmer. That's the end of the show. That's curtains. Who's going to want to shop at Men's Warehouse now that they don't guarantee the way you look? You're not going to like it. There's no – I can't do it, DB. Jose Bank, here I come.
Oh, boy.
This is going to be like San Antonio firing Greg Popovich right now.
Yes, that's a good analogy.
Who does that? Well, apparently the Lakers do because they got rid of Phil Jackson. But and look how that's working out for him now.
Yeah.
It's just a bad idea. Got business issues?
Well,
settle.
Yeah. Especially with a notable person like that. Well, we'll see. I will say this about Men's Warehouse from a personal perspective, and I don't mean to use our podcast as a pulpit to complain about things, but the last time I was in there purchasing my new suits, the customer service was less than stellar. Certainly you have good products, Men's Warehouse, but maybe this is the beginning of your decline.
I tell you what, that's because they fired George.
Yeah.
All right. There's a great piece about Men's Warehouse. They're talking about from a women's standpoint, and the piece was on Jezebel, and it was a great piece talking about how this woman who'd never gone shopping for suits before, she was going with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend needed a real suit, not, you know, a bunch of things you cobble together, Banana Republic and H&M and that sort of thing. So they went to a Men's Warehouse, and she found the whole experience amazing. You go in there, and there are racks of suits all over the place, and people bring out the suits you want. If you don't like it, you get a few more, and accessories appear out of nowhere, and everyone knows what you're supposed to look like. And it was just so easy and so simple. And she's like, why can't women's shopping be like this? And it was very funny. It was very humorous. But when you think about it, DB, this is why when men go suit shopping, they don't mind going suit shopping because they know they're going to be in and out in 45 minutes. And it's why guys don't want to go shopping with women when they're looking for dresses because they really have no idea how long it's going to take.
Yeah. Well, men now are even doing more shopping of things, as you say, online, particularly with things that, you know, they don't really feel like going to the mall and buying, like, you know, undergarments and those sorts of annoying things to go and purchase.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, look, suit shopping is real simple, DB. You and I have done it. I mean, we do. You go to the store, and if it doesn't fit quite right, the tailor comes out, marks it up, you get it tailored, you go pick it up, you're done. It's really simple. And Men's Warehouse has done a lot for suit shopping. They've made it so simple, and Jose Bank is sort of an upscale Men's Warehouse. And so you don't have to just go to Macy's and Nordstrom's and Penney's anymore. And by the way, don't buy suits at Penney's, people. Just don't. When you buy a suit of pennies, the rest of the world can tell. We really can.
Oh.
We might never have stepped foot into pennies, but we can just look at you and say, yeah, that's a penny suit. So just don't do it.
Oh. Yeah, you're like the guy that designed the Miami Heat parade route. You should be fired if you wear a penny suit.
Oh, good grief. What was up with the Miami Heat parade route?
Did you see
they almost got decapitated.
Yes. Note to parade planners. Hopefully Chicago Blackhawks learned a lesson today, whenever the parade is. Do not have guys sitting on double-decker buses that are going under bridges. Come on now.
Bridges
where guys that are 6'8".
Yeah, but these are bridges where the buses can barely fit underneath.
Yeah, you don't, yes. And did you see, by the way, the aerial shots of so few people out there for the Miami parade festival?
Well, Miami fans suck.
Oh,
I mean,
you
talk about that they're terrible. Those Miami fans are left in game 6 and then tried to get back into the stadium. The security guard shut the door on them. That was fantastic.
Terrible.
All right. Well, I think that wraps it up for this show, DB.
Yeah, that was a long one.
Yeah, that was a long one. It was a long one, but a good
one. You got your Spartan Nation, you got your money's worth and then some out of us this week with our Mad Men special podcast that you can go back and listen to if you want to get your season recap and all things Spartans and everything else right here. I think we've put a bow on the sports world for this month.
Yeah, a little ball in the sports world. Yeah, I think it was good. Yeah, you got the Mad Men, you got this. This is good. And next week, we'll talk about Spartan sports. Or maybe not next week because I'm going to Vegas, so we have to figure this out, DB. But in the near future. But we do have to at some point, in addition to the Michigan State stuff we're going to talk about, we have to talk about Mistresses, which is the new show. I forget, it's on NBC or ABC, one of those networks. It's tough when you DVR shows now. You really don't know what channel it's on anymore. But Alyssa Milano back on TV, DB.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Ava Sava. You and I are of the Alyssa Milano age.
Yeah.
Well, she's a little older than us, but we grew up with Alyssa Milano. It's more what I'm trying to say. And so
absolutely.
We have a particular interest in her career.
Well,
all right. I think that's a good tease for the next show. We'll figure out we'll figure out when that will be. But in the meantime, enjoy your Michigan State sports. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll talk to you the next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.